We got a great show brewing for you this evening. My guests, Deborah Pickman and Tony Pickman, survivors of the famous Sally House haunting. It's one of the most notorious and well-documented hauntings in America. It's been the site of paranormal investigators, psychics, and many different TV shows. Tony and Deborah Pickman are here with me this evening to talk about their experiences from the minute they moved in until the moment they fled in terror. They're going to share their accounts with us this evening. We've heard all the fun stuff. We've heard all the strange beginnings. But when does it turn dark? When do things start to really go badly for the Pickman family? We're going to cover that in the next hour. We'll start opening up phone lines at the top of next hour, so stay with us. We've got great stories to share with you right here on the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM. From a very innocuous start with the haunting at the Sally House, things quickly begin to develop into what is considered to be one of the most frightening and terrifying malevolent hauntings in American history and one of the most well-documented cases. We have two of the survivors with us this evening, Tony and Deborah Pickman. They've written a book all about their experiences, loaded with photographs, stories, never-before-heard tales. It's all available. You can check out their website, thesallyhouse.com, and that's S-A-L-L-I-E, thesallyhouse.com. We have links up to that at Coast to Coast AM, so I encourage you to go check that out and also see some of the weird news that we've been able to post this evening. All right, guys, we've heard the beginnings. We've heard how this started. You picked up the name Sally from a psychic friend of yours who picked up that that was a name attached to whatever spirit was in this home. Did this woman tell you at this point that she believed that this was the spirit of a child?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, have you thought maybe we should approach the owner of this house and ask him if anything weird has happened before?
Well, he had just bought the house a few months before we moved in. So we didn't figure that he would have any information like that.
Okay. So you're in there. How does it begin to change from this very bland, innocent type of haunting, like the ghost just wants you to know it's there, to things really kind of getting out of control? How much longer? You said it was kind of slowly building as the baby was on its way, and after the baby came, then it started to grow even more with activity. Do you think that the little girl's spirit was irritated that your son was getting your attention now, and that maybe it was no longer your interest or focal point?
That was a thought that crossed our mind. I do remember more so that it seemed to want Tony's attention more. Wanted acknowledgement, wanted acceptance. And I can remember he had fallen asleep on the couch after I went up to take a shower. And when I came out of the bathroom upstairs, he was in the hallway waiting for me. Turned around, dropped his drawers, and screamed, basically, "She bit me. Deb, she bit me." And he did have teeth marks, little teeth marks on the upper back thigh of his leg. And I guess I'm a bad wife because I busted out in laughter. I just thought it was funny.
All right, Tony, walk me through your angle on this. Are you at? Are you in bed? Are you?
No, I was actually in the living room downstairs, and I was laying on the floor of the living room just watching TV, and I was laying on my stomach when, oh man, it was an excruciating pain. It just, something bit the back of my thigh. And I'm like, you know, your first instinct is, you know, I wanted to think spider, but yet it felt so different. And I just remember jumping up and dropping my drawers, and I'm like, kind of, you really had to twist to see it, and I'm seeing what looked like teeth marks, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I've just been hit by this supposedly little girl that we have, and I was almost pissed off, and I remember running up the stairs, and yeah, I met her right as she was coming out the bathroom. I'm like, she bit me. What kind of kid does this?
So here you're upset about this. You're irritated. I'm sure probably a little spooked. Your wife starts laughing at you. Is this haunting starting to cause a little rift in the household because you're both getting reactions in totally different ways?
Oh, definitely. And that rift just kept growing. You know, the longer we were there, it really played us against each other because Deb was not having the extreme things that I was having and experiencing. And the more I wanted her to understand, this just doesn't seem right. This doesn't seem like something a little girl would do. It seemed like she was just taking it in more, like accepting her more.
And defending it.
So you felt like you were kind of on the defense of this. Were you, because do you think you were in motherly mode with your son, that maybe you were just being a little bit more forgiving toward this little child than Tony was?
I was, you know, the whole, the mothering part, the wanting, you know, to interact with a ghost myself. I wanted to defend it, saying, surely you're not seeing the positive. You're making a mountain out of a molehill kind of a thing. Just chill out kind of a thing.
Now, looking back at it, do you feel like something was numbing you to this effect? Because, I mean, would you have the same concern? Would you just be kind of like, come on, Tony, man up, pull your pants up and deal with it again? Or do you think you'd be a lot, do you think that you might handle it a lot more cautiously, or, you know, handle it much differently?
Well, you know, after doing, you know, years of investigation work, after we moved out of the house and learning so much, if I know now or knew then what I know now, yeah, I would take a different outlook. But going back to when we lived there, I was not quite myself, whether it was motherhood or whether it was an influence. I'm not really sure, because I say this because I'm naturally very logical, very processing, very, I ask questions. If there's a situation that presents itself, I ask questions so that I have a 360 degree view on the situation and I can make my assessment. And I rarely ask Tony questions or why or when or what time or how this happened or what do you think or what did you hear? What I didn't ask him anything.
Yeah, so
I
unlike her.
He just blew it off and laughed.
And that was so unlike her. I mean, I remember there were so many times when I just wanted to shake her and say, can't you see what this is doing to me? I mean, this is causing physical harm. And she would just blow it off like it was nothing. It was so strange.
So it had worked on me, it had a grasp on me, or an influence on me, whatever you want to call it. It won me over by presenting as a little girl. And the more Tony didn't want to acknowledge it, the more it worked harder on him and changed the way it presented to him to gain his acceptance. And it would show itself, you know, Tony had seen several different apparitions in the house after the little girl.
Yeah, so had you actually seen the little girl? Had you seen this apparition, Tony? Or are you still just...
I'd come home from work one morning, and I had gone in the kitchen, got some juice out of the fridge, started to pour a glass, and as I turned around to take a drink, there's this little girl standing in front of the basement door. There's a door leading to the basement from the kitchen. And she's just standing there, and she looks so real. And I remember my first thought was, you know, who is this? Is this a neighbor girl that's just standing in my kitchen? And why is she dressed so funny? Because she had on clothes that just didn't match our time period. And then it kicked in that, oh, my God, I can see the door through her. And
get ready, because here's another manly
moment.
Yeah,
this is another proud moment. I probably screamed like a girl. I can't mostly remember. I just remember dropping my glass. Cause it was just like instant shock, and trucking up the stairs and trying to wake Deb up to tell her about it. And I was more or less hyperventilating. All I could think was, oh, my God, I saw her. Because until this point, I couldn't visualize a little girl at all. You know, I'd heard the psychic say it, but it just wasn't registering.
Did she look angry or evil, or did she just look like any little turn of the century girl photograph you've seen?
That was what was so strange, was with the experiences I was having were violent, but yet I remember her. She was just gave me a look almost like I scared her. Her eyes were just big, like she'd seen a ghost. I'll never forget that.
Really? Now that brings in a whole another bizarre dynamic. So she now sees you and witnesses you, and does she have a reaction to you, Tony, or does she just stare vacantly like, what am I seeing?
Yeah, I mean, she was just staring vacantly at me until I remember as soon as that glass dropped and broke, she was gone, and I took off up the stairs. I mean, it happened what seemed like an eternity. It happened in seconds.
Now, this spirit chose to make itself seen as a little girl ghost. Did she appear to you repeatedly as a little girl, Tony, or did things change for you?
I'd seen her as the little girl, and I'd only seen her twice as that. There was another time in the bedroom when I...
Well, hold tight. Let me ask Deborah, did you ever see the manifestation of this little girl, or are you just going on Tony's word?
I never saw. When he came up hyperventilating and said, sorry, I saw her, Dad. You know, the only thing that went through my mind was, okay, here I am believing in spirits and this little girl, and I'm protecting, you know, her, defending her, and she shows herself to Tony. I was so jealous.
Wow, this must be an awkward moment for the family. You're like, Tony's freaking out about this situation. I'm being bit. I'm seeing ghosts.
Yeah,
and like,
I'm
you're such a jerk.
I remember telling her, and I'm expecting her to say, okay, we're getting out of here. We're getting, and all she could say was, oh, my God, I'm so jealous.
All right, so now take me back. You said now there's this experience where you're in your bedroom, Tony.
Yeah,
what
happens? There was an evening we were trying to sleep. Deb had fallen asleep, and I, at the time, thought I was dreaming. I remember I saw the same little girl, and she was standing by the side of the bed, and she kept reaching for me, like she was wanting me to come with her, and it scared the heck out of me. Every time she'd reach, I'd pull back. I remember her grabbing my wrist once, and I just jerked with all I had, and when I did that, that little girl changed shape, form. She turned into something, Dave, that, oh, my God, I'll never get that image out of my head. It was horrifying. It was like part animal, part human, and it let out this freaking growl that, oh, my God. I remember waking Deb up, and once again, she was able to calm me down. She's like, it was probably a bad nightmare, Well, when we woke up in the morning, I had the handprint of a little girl burnt onto my arm. I mean, there were blister-like welts with, you know, five fingers and a thumb wrapped around my wrist.
Are you thinking at this point it's time to get out of here?
I was thinking that before then, but yeah, definitely now.
When the mobile started spinning long before your son, you were thinking that's a good time to get out? All right, so you've got all that going on now. Deb, it's starting to leave marks on your husband. You're just fascinated by this.
Yeah.
Well, sure, because it's not happening to you, right? And I don't mean that cold.
Yeah,
or...
and I swear I was not reacting the way I would have. I mean, family to me is everything. And I was not, that was certainly was not my reaction. The safety of my husband seemed nullified. All I could think of was this was fascinating. You know, I look back and we did a conference. I don't know which one it was, but I remember standing on stage talking about this and how much I kind of downplayed the things that he was going through and the things that he would tell me and, you know, how bad I felt emotionally, that I was not emotionally supportive of him, of what he was going through. And I ended up crying on stage. You know, when we were given our talk, it was just so overwhelming to finally acknowledge how really poorly I had been as a wife. You know, your wife is supposed to be your lifelong companion, and, you know, you trust her with your life, and, you know, you tell her your fears and your hopes and dreams. And, you know, he was trying to, you know, the scratching in the walls and the things he was hearing, the dreams he was having, and, yeah, they weren't meaning anything to me. They were like, oh, you're lacking sleep, or maybe it's in your head, or, you know, maybe you're just you're just too tired, or you're dreaming, or, you know, I always had something logical to say to kind of process it off.
Tony, were you ever going through a feeling of maybe you were having a mental breakdown and none of this was actually happening? You were just imagining it or hallucinating?
No, I was. It was a, you know, and the more it happened, the more you thought that. Because I, with her not accepting it or being able to understand it like I was, and her taking it in so easy, I thought that, yeah, I mean, as I was ready to go have a mental evaluation. I remember I had gotten so nervous I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep. I'd try to go to sleep, and I'd hear noises in the wall behind me, just like a scratching, and it would sound like 6 to 8 people whispering at one time. And, you know, you start hearing voices and stuff. I mean, that's your first instinct is, what is wrong with me? And I remember losing 14 pounds within a month and ending up in the hospital. And here's these doctor and nurses, and they're wanting me to take my shirt off and being petrified because I'm covered with scratches. And I'm thinking, how are they going to act? How can I tell these people? I live in a haunted house. They're going to put me in a funny farm. yeah, I struggle with that a lot, you know, all the time.
Well, and understandably so, you know, you're questioning your own sanity and then wondering what you must look like and what these stories must sound like to the outside world. Were they taking you seriously, or were they thinking you were seriously disturbed?
You know, to my surprise, the doctor took it so serious and was just like, you need to get out of there. There's no way I'd be in this house. I mean, that totally threw me. I had a lot of people were thinking that Deb was doing it to me when I was sleeping. You know,
we've been told a couple times that had we lived in a bigger city, I would have been arrested for spousal abuse because somebody would have reported it. It would not have, you know, slid by as easily as it did in this small, know everybody kind of town.
It got to the point where if I had scratches, because it had gotten to that severity, I tried to hide it. You know, I kind of kept it to myself, and there's several I even kept from Deb, because I was always scared, you know, once sightings got involved, it seemed like whenever they came back, things would escalate. It seemed like the more energy that you put into the house, the worse it got. And it got to the point where I was scared to tell her about any of that for fear that they would come back up. And I literally, you know, after the scratching and the harm like that, I was scared what could happen to me or my child or Deb, you know.
Sure.
It was horrifying to involve the TV.
Were the attacks ever in a sexual nature towards you, Tony?
I had three that I can remember, and it would start out where I would feel something rubbing my ankles, and then it would move up towards my thighs, and I would tell Deb about it, and, you know, in her state of mind, she was still thinking, oh, you must be dreaming.
And but the last time it happened,
I was able to get her awake in time to point it out to her, and you could see the imprint of the hand on my thigh.
And the fingers of those imprints were pointing up his thighs very close to his groin. And you could see, I mean, it was not imprints that he could make himself. You know, it wasn't something that he was making up or dreaming about. I mean, I physically saw that. And
were these handprints still child size, or were they larger?
No,
they were larger. And I think this was after the Christmas photo. We were always taking photos, not just because baby, but because we had so much paranormal kind of stuff going on. Sometimes we took photos not expecting paranormal, and there was paranormal, and the Christmas photo was one of them, where it showed two separate and distinctly different anomalies in the photograph in two different places. And I think that was when we first realized that there were two different spirits, entities in our house.
When a haunting goes bad, we have to take a break. We're going to continue with Deborah and Tony Pickman as we talk about the haunting of the Sally House right after this. One of the most fascinating and well-documented cases of hauntings in America, the Sally House haunting. That's our topic tonight on Coast to Coast AM. If you've missed any part of tonight's show, no need to worry. It's very easy to access tonight's show and many past episodes. Just go to coasttocoastam.com and sign up to become a Coast Insider. For about 15 cents a day, you can get access to over 5 years of past archives of the best in overnight talk radio. You'll also get access to the news. You'll get access to live chats with George Norrie and the other hosts of Coast to Coast AM. You'll also get access to live chats with some of the most fascinating guests on topics ranging from ghosts to the postmodern World War III effort looking like it's ready to break at any time. We've got everything all under one encompassing blanket at Coast to Coast AM. Go check it out and sign up to become an insider right now. When we return, we're going to continue talking with our guests this evening. We'll take calls later on in the show as well. We're going to find out about the malevolent haunting of the Sally House, how this couple that was trying to live their dream, have their own place, raise a baby, how their life was turned upside down, inside out, and terrified that they had to actually leave and flee from this home. That's coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Dave Schrader, and you're listening to Coast AM. My guests for the evening are Deborah and Tony Pickman, survivors and experiencers of the Sally House haunting. You can check out more information about our guests, see some of the photographs, hear some of the EVPs, and order signed copies of the book by going to thesallyhouse.com. And again, that's S-A-L-L-I-E, thesallyhouse.com. Go check out the website, and you can find links to it right at coasttocoastam.com. All right, we've got time slipping away from us, guys. I want to get into this story. This is chilling. You've got all of this activity, started off so slow and general, and now, Tony, you're becoming the focal point of this haunting. You're being attacked. Your wife is almost disjointed from this. She, like, there's no impact to her. She doesn't realize the depth of what you're dealing with psychologically and physically in this haunting. You said that there started to divide. There was a rift between the two of you. And how was that affecting the marriage and the relationship? And was your child ever in danger during this as well?
I don't think Taylor was. I mean, I constantly had that fear that he was, because the stuff that was happening to me, I'm like, you know, he would be so much, he can't communicate if it's happening to him. And I wasn't sure. I mean, he was having no physical marks or anything on him, but, you know, it was always through my mind, can he see this? Is something scaring him? You know, was something, when he kept waking up, was something scaring him? And I battled with that. And I tell you, as a father, that's a horrifying thing to live with. As far as Deb and I, it was definitely affecting us. It had us at... You know, what people never saw on sightings was the outrageous arguments we had.
Weeks worth of arguments, just neck to neck. You know, I was all for them coming up because I did think it was something remarkable for paranormal investigators. And Tony just wanted it to be done, and he didn't want his family name ruined because, you know, here, you know, we're in the Bible Belt. We're in... You know, a situation where his family, he's got a large family, his mother and father have 26 siblings apiece, and they've permeated through the town. Either you know a Pickman, you work with a Pickman, or you live near a Pickman. And it was just, you know, back in the 90s, 20 years ago, this wasn't talked about like it is today.
Right.
So we went round and round fiercely and probably infused with the negativity that, you know, was coming from this entity we were dealing with.
Well, how did you get sightings involved in this case?
The psychic Barbara Connor lived out in California, and she did some talks at universities. And apparently her talks were attended by a lot of the shows at the time. Unsolved Mysteries, you know, sightings and the like. And they... several of them had approached her after one of her lectures and were wanting, she talked about us anonymously. They wanted to know who the family was to because they wanted to get a hold of the family and cover the story. And so she got in touch with us and said, okay, you know, I'm just throwing this out here. I'm not trying to push you into it. Your story's, you know, and the evidence that I'm showing is, you know, really getting some attention. There's some groups out there that, you know, want to help. They want to hear your story. This is what you can expect from them. And she said, if you're going to do something like this, know ahead of time it's going to change your life. And if you do something like this, because I know the town that you live in, you should go with the smaller of all these programs, because they won't come with, you know, a semi truck full of equipment and stake out your house and, you know, be an eyesore in the whole city. And that's where it started.
Yeah, at the time, sightings was a little less known than unsolved mysteries. So, yeah, we chose that to go with.
You said that you believe that there was more than one entity. What is your belief now? How many do you believe were in this house, or was it the same entity just doing different things?
At this point, I was already kind of thinking it was the same entity, because it went from showing itself to me as a little girl to I would literally see Deborah in like 18th century clothing. I would be standing in the bathroom or in the tub, and at this point I would take a bath with the door open, because I was scared to be alone. And there were a couple of times when I'd seen what looked like Deborah walk past the doorway, and she would go into a certain room, and I would get up, dry off, I'd go in there, no honey. I'd go in the bedroom, and there's Deborah, you know, sitting in, you know, her pajamas or whatever, her hair down. I mean, nothing but looked like I saw her, you know, just a few minutes before. After that, it took on the appearance of, I've always referred to her as the store owner off of Little House on the Prairie, the real kind of grouchy woman.
Oh, sure, Mrs. Olson.
And
yeah.
that's kind of what she looked like. And,
right.
And whenever I saw her, it was never a good situation. Things were just so violent, and things would move everything from the dressers to the drawers on the or tables on each side of the bed would open and slam, and she would materialize. She would start off slow, almost like dust particles coming through the window, and then they would get almost black, and pretty soon you could make out her full form down to, I always remember she had a black and white brooch on, and she would come around to my side of the bed, and she would reach for me, what it felt like she was reaching for my neck, and I remember her saying the words, I'm gonna, and at that minute, I would see on her hand would be like a crow, a black bird, and then she would just disappear. I never quite understood it, but that's what would happen. And I, one particular time, it sounded like World War III going on in the master bedroom. The dresser lifted up, spun around, the drawers were opening. I remember the bed started just, we had a pretty heavy water bed. It was a sturdy water bed. And the mattress just started waving, but it got to the point where it felt like somebody jumping on it, because I was flopping up and down on this thing. And I'd never been so scared that I couldn't get any noise to come out. But that's what it was. I was trying to scream for Deb, and I couldn't get a noise.
I was in the room across the hallway, and I didn't hear any of this.
I literally ended up on my hands and knees trying to turn the doorknob to get it open, and I couldn't get the door open.
And is there any concern on your part, Deborah, that your husband might be going nuts and that only he is mentally thinking that these things are going on? Did that cross your mind?
No, I think that the worst that I was thinking was that he was lacking sleep. You know how sleep deprivation can make people, I guess, hallucinate?
Right.
And I thought, because he would work the midnight shift, he would come home first thing in the morning, and, you know, the rest of his family's up playing, going through their day, shopping, going out, and he was missing out on that. And he didn't want to miss out on anything with, you know, his newborn. And so he'd get up midway through the day and not get, I mean, he'd get maybe 4 hours of sleep. And people can't just keep running on that or less, you know, because these disturbances. So I really did, I was chalking it up to sleep deprivation.
Tony, why at this point you're getting attacked, you're being scratched, you're being bitten, you're being frightened to even take a bath by yourself? Why not just say, Deb, we're out of here. We're leaving.
That was said several times. But for some reason, she was always able to talk me out of it. And to this day, I don't know what actually kept us there. I mean, part of it was we weren't financially ready. I mean, we were kind of more or less forced to leave our last place. We found this place in really short notice. The baby was born. And I don't know. I don't know if she was just extra convincing or if part of it was just it finally had gotten me to the point to where I wasn't thinking straight, and it was just, it was okay. Almost like I was becoming part of the house. I got to the point where I didn't want to leave, and I only wanted to think bad and harmful things. I can remember her just walking by me in a room, and all I could think was I just wanted to reach out and clobber, just hurt her, and you know, it hurts me to say that, you know, to feel that way about anybody you love so much, but that's what it was turning into.
Do you feel that the spirits, or I even hesitate to call them spirits because it sounds more like evil manifestations.
Exactly.
Do you feel, were they influencing you, Tony, to want to hurt her? Or was it just the human frustration of, my God, please, I'm being abused here. I can't take it anymore. Was it that type of anger that was building?
I think it was more than that. I think it was a little bit of, you know, the feeling, I felt a little betrayed because she wouldn't listen, but at the same time, I almost quit caring about, I didn't see her as her anymore, and I didn't feel like me anymore, and it just felt like it was something evil that was using the rift that caused between us to make things worse. I literally, you know, the story of Amityville where a man kills his family, it's so scary to think that I think that's where it was headed, because I literally, you had no control. It was like when you were in the house, it was just pure evil. That's all I could think.
And so do you believe it was working its way to possession?
I do. I seriously do.
I think looking back, I witnessed a partial possession. We were hanging out on the couch, and it must have been like a Saturday or something. He was sleeping. We had a long sectional couch, so he was sleeping on his back, and I was sitting at the other end of the couch. He dozed off, and he sat almost mechanically straight up, looked at me, and said, "He's mine." And yes, it was his voice, but there was something in the tone.
Interesting. Tony, are you there?
I'm there.
All right, we've lost Deborah. She's in the midst of telling us this story. And that might play into effect as we continue our story into the top of the next hour, because the haunting ended for you in that house, but you've never really truly been free of what's gone on there. We'll get back to that. But let me ask you, Tony, did you ever feel that your wife was being influenced, maybe possessed by the spirits of this home?
Honestly, I did. I felt as much as it was messing with me physically, I felt like it was controlling her. It's like it had put a mental block up on her, because like she said, it just was not her to question. And if this was to happen to her now, she would have been the first one to say, "We're getting out of here." But something it really felt was just blocking her way of thinking.
Could you feel yourself slipping? Was there ever points where you were doing things, you were aware you were doing it, but you felt you had no control over your own actions?
Yeah, several times. Dave, it got so bad that I literally was thinking about, there was a time, I hate to even talk about it. I remember thinking one day when she came home from work, I had planned on just, I was going to do her in. And that sounds horrible, but that's the point it had gotten to. And, you know, I just want to be honest. That's the stuff that people didn't see on the TV shows when they came up. It had gotten that bad.
Deb, you hear this now, and he says this to you. And, of course, you guys have talked about this. You know this is part of it. Did you ever realize that it was getting that bad, that he was actually considering murder?
Absolutely not. I found out afterwards that there were several things that he just didn't tell me. And I think in a big way it was because I kept kind of blowing him off, you know, and what he was telling me wasn't sinking in. It wasn't making a difference. I wasn't hearing him. And, you know, as things got worse, he probably just took on the thought that, you know, she's not going to hear me anyway. She's not going to listen to me anyway. She's not going to take me serious anyway. So he just stopped talking to me about things that he was experiencing. And so as it became worse, I didn't know.
You said that before you got cut off on the line, you said that you believe that at one point you witnessed a partial possession. What occurred during that moment?
Well, I don't know where I got cut off, but we were on the couch. We had a long sectional couch, and he was laying on his back at one end of the couch, and I was sitting at the other end of the couch. And he sat up and almost mechanically sat up, I mean, like straight up,
right?
And said, "He's mine." And it was his voice, but there was something just a little bit different about it. I don't know if it was the tone or the inflection or something. And it should have been a red flag. In hindsight, you know, they say it's wonderful. But in the state of mind that I was in and being, you know, new mother and all, and knowing how protective he was of his family, my first thought was that he had a dream and he was, you know, dreaming somebody was going to take his newborn baby away. And so that's what I kind of blew it off to.
Because what was it that he said? He said,
"He's
mine." Okay.
And he had looked me straight in the eye when he said it, and as soon as the words were out of his mouth, he laid back down. And in hindsight, knowing, you know, what we experienced afterwards, what we experienced when we went back and investigated the house 10 years ago, and the other experiences that we've had during the investigations, I, you know, 100% believe that was at least a partial possession, and somebody, some spirit, some entity was in him saying, "He's mine. He's not yours anymore. We have control of him."
And Dave, there were several nights or times, and I had woke up and I would be standing, and these are some of the things that she found out later. I was standing by her side of the bed or out in the hallway, and I don't recall it. I would just all of a sudden wake up, and I would look at the clock, and hours had been by, and I was apparently had just been standing there.
Like that chilling moment in the movie Paranormal Activity when they just show the woman standing looking at her husband in bed, and the clock is just rolling as hours fly by. That is one of the most chilling scenes.
I was scared to tell her this stuff because for me it was one. It would just be, you know, I felt laughed at the time, or I'd already felt like a experiment. And scared that, okay, if I tell her, all that's going to come of it is more people were brought into it, and it seemed like the more stuff there, the worse I got it, or the more pain I had to go through, and it just wasn't worth it. Pretty soon I felt like I wanted her, and I say this, I wanted her out of our house, because I didn't mean that as like ours, Deb and I's. It started feeling like it was me and someone else's, and she was just in the way.
And this thing was starting to win you over now. This is starting to control you,
exactly.
Control your actions. Now, we've only got about a minute left in this segment. Did the violence ever spill over in a physical way? We'll find out about that when we return. We'll find out how this amped up and what made them finally flee the house that they thought was going to be their dream home, the start of their family, a new beginning for the Pickmans. If you want more information, check out their website, thesallyhouse.com. We have links to it up at Coast to Coast AM. Stay tuned. The story gets deeper right after this.